The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. Welcome, welcome. Nice to see you all. Last week I was on the East Coast, and the second night I was there, it snowed. It was just this beautiful snow with these giant, you know, white puffy flakes, and it snowed all that day too. And then, but just waking up in the morning and looking out and seeing how everything had this beautiful, you know, white cloak on it. It wasn't windy. There was something that I just felt really touched by that. I felt really touched by, I don't know, just being a Californian, right? Here in the Bay Area, I don't see snow that often. But there was also a certain, maybe little letting go or a little sense of, that happened. And I want to talk about this a little bit, about how ordinary moments, for me, it felt a little extraordinary to be with the snow. And I knew that it might snow, so I had brought all kinds of warm gear. So it was fun for me to be outside when it was snowing. But tonight I want to talk a little bit about this idea, just these ordinary moments, just looking out the window, can be opportunities, unplanned, unexpected, just a little bit of this opening of the heart and the mind, this softening, this letting go that helps support this movement towards greater and greater freedom. And Jim, I'm sorry to ask you this. Can we turn up the volume just a tiny bit? I know it's kind of crazy. Maybe there should be like a volume up here so I could just do this. But pretty soon, maybe you should sit here and I should sit there. Thank you, Jim. So I'd like to start us off with a poem that maybe points to this in some kind of way. This, how an ordinary moment can have an, maybe we might say, extraordinary impact or effect. This poem is entitled Padachara, and I'll talk a little bit about it afterwards, but first I'll say it. Plowing fields with plows, sowing seeds in the ground, caring for children and family, people gain wealth. Why is it that I, thorough and virtuous conduct, doing the Buddha's instruction, not lazy or proud, why is it that I have not attained release? I watched the water, the foot washing water, flow from high ground to low. With this, the mind concentrated like a thoroughbred horse. Taking an oil lamp, I entered my hut. Looking over the bed, I sat down on the bed. Taking a needle, I pulled out the wick. As the flame went out, the mind was freed. As the flame went out, the mind was freed. This poem begins with this person noticing, well, other people are getting what they want. They are sowing seeds and they get the fruits of their labor. They're raising a family and they have the benefits of being in a family. And why isn't this person who really wants to have freedom, why can't they have freedom? There's something very beautiful about this because it feels so human. and we want something, and there can be this sense of like, well, other people either have that or have what they want. Why can't I get what I'm doing what I think I'm supposed to be doing? Padachara in this poem saying that she follows the Buddha's instructions. She's not lazy or proud, and she has virtuous conduct. So she's doing what she believes she should be doing. And then, and maybe I'll say that perhaps she's feeling some frustration or disappointment or maybe even some confusion, maybe some wondering, like, what am I doing wrong? And then she watches, as was common, this poem was written thousands of years ago. It's captured in the Buddhist literature. It's the oldest, it's part of the collection, the oldest literature that humans have that are attributed to women are in this Buddhist Pali Canon. Padachara was a nun, and this is her awakening poem. And she describes how she watches the water flowing from high ground to low ground, washing your feet at the end of the day. There's no such thing as pavement, right? Thousands of years ago, I don't have shoes like we have today. Of course, they wash their feet at the end of every day before going to sleep. Her whole life, she had been washing her feet probably every day. And probably her whole life, they did it that it would run down, you know, downhill. And this time, there was something about just watching the water that the mind just kind of collected. For me, maybe it was like watching the snow fall. There was something just beautiful, just this ordinary thing. For many people, it's they see it regularly. But well, there was something that moved in me when I was just watching the snowfall. Maybe it was like Padachara's mind when she was watching just the water go downhill. And then she turns off the wick of the lantern. Poof, it's dark. And then with that big change, all of a sudden can't see anything. Right, it's completely dark, right? There's no other sources of light, of course, right? Then there's this way that there's no longer anything for the senses to hold on to. There's the vision was no longer there. And so the mind just let go. And with that was freedom, which he had been looking for. It wasn't found while she was on the cushion, straining and striving and huffing and puffing, even though she had been doing the Buddha's teachings. But the awakening happened in an ordinary moment. I've heard this, and I've had this in my own experiences too. It's like having the first cup of tea or standing up after a meditation to go do whatever is next. Or for somebody taking a bite of breakfast or, you know, something like this. Just an, or driving. Sometimes people have things that happen with driving. Ordinary things that we've done over and over and over again so that the mind has a different way of being present. It's there, but it also has some ease because it's done this activity so many times that allows some deeper letting go that we didn't even know we were holding on. So this, you know, ordinary moment, this letting go. And something for me that's noteworthy is that this poem for Padachara occurs within a background of difficulties. Padachara, as I said, she was one of the nun, but she was one of the preeminent nuns. She was an esteemed teacher. So she taught other women and allowed them to have freedom and become awakened. And she came to practice after experiencing tremendous tragedy in her life. Her husband died unexpectedly. And then her parents died unexpectedly. And then her children died unexpectedly. Three different events. Can you just, like, I just can't even imagine, right? So heartbreaking. And so that she was like crazed with grief and like didn't even know what to do with herself anymore. I can only imagine. Just terrible. So then she meets the Buddha accidentally, and the Buddha could see that, oh, here's this poor person. He's really suffering. And the Buddha gives her some teachings. And I'm imagining that she thinks, I've lost everything. I might as well do these practices. What else is there? So, and she, in the poem that I just read, she talks about her virtuous conduct and doing the Buddha's teachings and it not being lazy or proud. So she probably gave herself wholeheartedly. She did ordain and then became awakened. So the Buddhist scriptures, maybe I'll back up and say, as I mentioned, this is part of the Therigata, which is this collection of women's poems for women's awakening experiences. And they have some unique feminine topics. So it feels like it's not just men writing about women. It definitely feels like women's voices. And just in general, we could say, you know, the Buddhist literature, there has this, you know, these maps of the path of practice and lots of lists and, you know, things to do. And it's beautiful. I love this kind of stuff. But it also has poetry, something different, right? That touches a different aspect of us. Maybe there's seasons in our practice, seasons in our life where we don't want to do lists and some structured practice. We want to maybe just follow our heart. Or maybe there's a time when we do want to do lists and practice and feel like, okay, what should I do next? And follow the instructions in that kind of way. I appreciate so much that there's both there. And I would say practice requires both. Both some of this diligent effort and structure, and then some opening up and softening and unstructured, letting ourselves be touched by our experiences, making some room so that some of these ordinary moments might open up into something extra ordinary. So there's this idea that we find in the Buddhist scriptures of this word kalyana. It can be translated as beauty, beautiful. But we might say spiritual beauty because it's not about what's visually pleasing. It's not about aesthetics. It's this beauty that, you know, touches us in some kind of way. This beauty where there's a feeling like, wow. So it might be aesthetically pleasing, but it's more a quality of the inner life. Maybe it's feel like the heart getting simpler in some way, or maybe there's a unclenching, ungripping that we didn't even know there was a gripping. There's a sense of, oh, you know, when we're touched by something. Often it's easy to think about this with visual art or maybe certain music, but there's often just maybe seeing children playing and just playing in a, you know, fun, playful way. And there can be something very sweet about that. That just feels great. Maybe there's the mind not needing to argue with the present moment for the time being. The mind just being with what's there. And it's we find in the suttas also this expression that the Dharma is beautiful in the beginning. The Dharma is beautiful in the middle. And the Dharma is beautiful in the end. There's so many different ways we can interpret that. But I kind of like thinking it's, you know, just through and through. And it doesn't matter from which angle you're looking at the Dharma or experiencing the Dharma. There's this beauty all throughout. And some of this poetry can help us touch into that. And for some of us, we like the lists too. Maybe there's that some of the beauty also. And I would say, yeah, we need both more the structured and the more poetic. We need both. Maybe clear guidelines can be really helpful. And maybe some inspiration can be really helpful. So now I'd like to read another poem by another nun. Her name was Citta. And this And this is how this poem goes. This is translated by Bhikkhu Sujato, I should say. Though I'm skinny, sick, and very feeble, I climb the mountain, leaning on a cane. Having laid down my outer robe and overturned my alms bowl, propping myself against a rock, I shattered the mass of darkness. Very simple. Climbing a mountain, even though it's difficult. In some kind of way, it can feel like our lives are like climbing a mountain. We're just one foot after the other, and sometimes it's not so easy. Sometimes it feels like we're going uphill. And I appreciate that in this poem, she's leaning on a cane, leaning on a staff. She's recognizing that it can be helpful to have support. And so she's using support. And this way it's, you know, kind of like, you know, obvious as something that she's holding. But there's some real wisdom in asking for support, getting support, recognizing that sometimes we need support. And then she puts everything down. And here it's mentioned literally. She puts down the alms bowl. She puts down her outer robe. She's a nun, so the monastics have outer robes and inner robes. So she puts down the outer robe. And then she puts down the body. She sits down. And then there's a way in which just everything gets put down and released. We could just ask, well, what would it be like for us to put down whatever it is that we're carrying that's extra? Whatever it is that we don't need, that feels burdensome and unnecessary. And this poem, Chitta is literally sitting down. But is there a way that we can feel what it's like to not be carrying what so often we are carrying? Maybe rehashing the conversation that we had earlier with somebody and trying to think oh, I should have said this, or I can't believe they said that. Or maybe we are rehearsing over and over and over and over something that we're going to do in the future. And then, of course, you know, when that conversation actually arises, it's never exactly how we thought it was going to be. And then in this poem, the mass of darkness is shattered. The darkness is a way that can represent ignorance, not seeing clearly, having this veiled delusion. So there's this way in which we could see what was couldn't have been seen before. And again, just like we saw with Padacharya, who went from light to dark, here maybe we're going from dark to light. What's this idea of this change of what's clear and what's not clear, or what the senses can see and what they can't see? And then, of course, here we are again in an ordinary moment, just something let go. She sat down and there was this letting go that allowed this greater freedom and ease. And having read that poem, that's from thousands of years ago, translated by Bhante Sujato, another poet wrote his own version of this poem, a modern-day version of it. He was inspired by this poem, and he wrote his own, which I think is beautiful. So the poet is Matty Weingast, and his version of this poem, or the poem that he wrote inspired by that, goes like this. Somehow I kept climbing, though tired, hungry, and weak, old too. At the top of the mountain, I spread my outer robe on a rack, on a rock to dry, set down my cane and bowl, took a deep breath and looked around. It was windy up there. As I was leaning back against a large gray rock, the darkness that I had carried up and down a million mountains slipped off my shoulders and swept itself away on the wind. Whew. I just kind of like this. This lovely idea that the wind just takes away what had been so burdensome. Just a little bit being in nature. Nature doing what nature does. And allowing ourselves to be touched by it. Here's another poem. This one, the nun's name is Sama. It includes this expression that she went forth. That means to ordain. So she became a nun. And again, this idea of the bowl, this is an alms bowl. The monastics have all their meals in alms bowls. This is Sama. In the 25 years since I went forth, I don't know that I ever found serenity in my mind. I had failed to find peace of heart or any control over my mind. When I remembered the victor's instructions, I was struck with a sense of urgency. Though subject to so many painful things, I have, through my love of diligence, reached the ending of craving and fulfilled the Buddha's instructions. This is the seventh day since my craving dried up. I just love this. Like, here's somebody who's saying, you know, I've been practicing for a long time and my mind still hasn't settled down. Like, she had this idea of how things should be and kept on feeling like, oh, I'm not doing it right. I'm inadequate. I'm doing it wrong. But this love, the Bhikkhu Sujato here is translating this love of diligence. It could also be like the words that's getting translated here. It could also be love of heedfulness, love of attention, love of zeal. Because diligence sometimes can feel like really heavy-handed. The point is that just this appreciation for just hanging in there. Just coming back and doing it again and again. And then it's just this reach the ending of craving, which is a freedom to not be pushed around and always after what we think we want or what we don't want. And the specific moment this happens, she doesn't say in this poem, but I'm imagining maybe there was an ordinary moment where something let go also. And it's this reminder that we might have this idea about how things should be and think that, oh, this practice isn't working. But she had this idea and she became free. Maybe that was what got let go of. Initially, it was this sense that things had to be different. But she had this willingness to hang in there. So then this same poet, this contemporary poet, Matty Weingast, he read that poem that I just read you, and he wrote his own poem, inspired by Sama, this nun. And this is his version, which has a little bit of whimsy and which I appreciate very much. After 25 years on the path, I'd experienced almost everything except peace. When I was young, my mother told me that I would find true happiness only in marriage. Remembering her words all those years later, something in me began to tremble. I gave myself to the trembling. And it showed me all the pain this little heart had ever known, and how countless lives of searching had brought me at last to the present moment, which I happily married. Can you imagine? We've been living together ever since without a single argument. Just this great idea, right? This kind of like this twist. This maybe this feeling like, okay, she thought she was supposed to do something. But, you know, this twist and finds freedom her own way, not exactly the way that maybe others were telling her it should be or the way that she thought it should be. This playfulness in here. And maybe I'll just highlight with some of themes in these poems that I've shared. There's a whole collection of these poems. Some themes are, there's difficulties on the path. All these poems are mentioning the Sampadachara, the first one, this feeling that everybody else is getting what they want. They're farming and getting the fruits of their labor. Well, why aren't I getting, I'm working so hard, why don't I find it? And then plus her backstory of having her whole family die through a different sequence of events. Citta, which was the second poem, she was climbing up the mountain and feeling very weak and needing a cane. And then Sama, the third poem, not finding peace despite being a monastic for 25 years. So that's one of the themes that we see in these poems. But also we see that all of these poems, these women, they express this sense of confidence, and maybe even a little bit of delight. There isn't this hemming and hawing, but there's a directness and a clarity that I appreciate very much. Like, you know, this, you can imagine them sitting up straight and just saying this, right? Instead of being, I don't know, shy or coy or something like this. There's something beautiful about this because it doesn't feel boastful. It just feels like this is what happened. And I'm sharing it, what happened. And we could ask, what would it be like for us to have that kind of confidence and delight in our own practice? Because there's a way we can feel like, okay, I should go meditate. One more thing on the to-do list. Or sometimes when I meet people for practice discussions, I'm surprised. One of the first things they'll say is like, oh, I haven't been meditating regularly. That is not my concern. My concern is like, what's happening in the heart and the mind and how are you meeting your life and these types of things. Meditation practice is a tremendous support, but it's not the only measurement of how we practice and how our practice is going. And then there's this theme of a shift that happens in the in-between ordinary moments. Turning off the lamp, leaning against the rock after climbing a mountain, following her love of practice, then this ordinary moment that arises. And then also this theme in these three different poems, their awakening, that freedom that they're discovering is described in different ways. It's not like there's only one description and it shows up in only one way. Padachara, her mind was freed. And with Citta, she shattered the mass of darkness, delusion or ignorance, we could say. Sama had the ending of craving. So it's not like it's one exact experience for everybody. And I know talking to practitioners, when they are experiencing some more freedom in their lives, it's not like everybody says the exact same thing. Of course not. Because the particulars of our lives are all different. And the way that we show up for our life is different. So the freedom will be experienced differently. And then maybe I'll read this one last poem. This is from Matty Weingast. He was inspired from a poem from this originally in the Tarigata. I'm not going to read the original one. I'm just going to read Matty Weingast's version. There's something kind of tender. At least I find it tender. And he titled this Grandma Sumana. Sumana is the name of the nun, but in the Pali, it's more like Samana, who ordained late in life. And he calls her Grandma Sumana, kind of like a term of endearment. And here's her poem, according to Matty Weingast. After all those years looking after others, this old heart has finally learned to look after itself. Each act of kindness, a stitch in this warm blanket that now covers me while I sleep. I don't know, there's something very sweet about this. Sometimes we can be taking care of others and not recognizing how maybe in some ways we've abandoned ourselves and some part of, maybe in some aspects of ourself, or maybe it's not uncommon for some people to always be taking care of others and not be present for their own life and taking care of themselves. And then this last stanza, each act of kindness, a stitch in this warm blanket. So there's no distinction between kindness for others or kindness for oneself. It's just this kindness helps create something that covers us as we sleep away, in which we can feel comforted, soothed, and feel safe with some of the ways in which we have kindness for others. So may we all contribute a verse to the poem of the human race. And may this verse be for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Thank you. And now I'd like to open it up to see if there's some comments or questions. About some of these, what I shared today, some of these poems, and this idea that ordinary moments can be a source of letting go. Okay. Well, I do have an announcement. Some of you here sometimes attend on Thursday nights, which I have been teaching. And I'll be there this Thursday. The Thursday after that is Christmas. We're not meeting. And then Thursday nights are going to be paused for a little bit until April. So keep an eye on the calendar for what's going to happen starting April. But I am there this Thursday. It'd be great to see you all there. Thank you.